Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the CCA Chile Presidential Election Preview conference call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. I would now like to turn the conference over to CCA President Kenneth Frankel. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, operator. Thank you all to have joined the conference call today. It's very timely with the second round of elections coming up this coming Sunday. For the record, this isn't on the record event, and we, as we do at all our events, thank our annual sponsors, our premium sponsors, who make all our events possible through their generous support. So we thank them again, as we do always. We're particularly excited about the event today because we have two leading Chilean experts who will be discussing the background to the election and the various issues involved in it that will be played out over the course of the next several days. One of them will be Patricio Navia, who's a full professor of liberal studies, an adjunct assistant professor in the Center for Latin American and Caribbean Studies at New York University. Patricio is also professor of political science at Universidad Diego Portales in Chile. He's a PhD in politics from NYU, an MA in political science from the University of Chicago, and a BA in political science and sociology from the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's been a visiting professor at Princeton University, New School University, Universidad de Salamanca, Universidad de Chile, and NYU Buenos Aires, and a visiting fellow at the University of Miami. He has published extensively, and you will see his commentary frequently in social media and throughout the web. Patricio is just finishing up a class teaching. He will be joining us in about 9 minutes. Also with us today is Robert Funk, who's an assistant professor of political science and director of the Center for the Study of Public Opinion in the Institute for Public Affairs, the Universidad de Chile, having served as deputy director from 2009 to 2013. He obtained his PhD in government from the London School of Economics and Political Science. His research areas include democratization, presidential leadership, and political elites in Latin America. He also publishes extensively in articles and books and does consulting with governments and in the private sector. So we'd like to welcome both of them now, and thank you for joining us. Robert, you're the only one on the line at the moment, so thank you for starting us off. As everybody knows on this call, the first round of elections in Chile were November 19th, and there were some surprises, particularly to the pollsters, who missed, and there may be reasons why that happened. I'm sure we'll get into that today, what the vote tally would be. So the prognostications were that Sebastián Piñera from the Chile Vamos party would get approximately 45%. In fact, there was earlier conversation that he might even get the requisite number to avoid a second round. But in fact, instead of 45%, he got 36%. Alejandro Guillier, from a socialist senator, received more or less what had been predicted. He got in the vicinity of 22-23. They predicted something in that vicinity, maybe a few percentage points less. There were two big surprises on that. Several. One, obviously, the one of ex-President Piñera, who they expected to do much better, and also one from the Frente Amplio, led by Beatriz Sánchez, who was predicted to get somewhere between 8 and 13%, and in fact, she got over 20%, and the Frente did very well in the congressional elections held as well. That was a big surprise, as was the showing of Mr. Kast, who was predicted to get maybe 2%, ended up getting in the vicinity of 8%. He comes from, I guess, you described as very much on the extreme ring of the Conservative Party, a follower of the legacy of General Pinochet. And as I say, he got 8%, and that was a surprise as well. There are a number of issues that are floating out there leading to the election, the final round coming up this Sunday. And I thought that we might get this started by first asking Robert if he wouldn't mind talking about the political calculus now for each of the candidates. The fact that the Frente has endorsed, or at least Beatriz Sanchez, the candidacy, although it certainly seemed lukewarm. What does that mean for Guillermo? What does it mean for the political calculus for Piñera that he has to bring or will bring on the extreme right of the political spectrum in Chile? How might that affect what he has to say during the campaign or has said during the campaign? And then we'll get into what that might mean later in terms of mm-hmm. what it might say about what he needs to do for governance. So, Robert, with that brief introduction, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what the political and electoral calculation looks like now for each candidate.
Well, you know, when you have first of all, hi everybody, and thank you for the invitation. And I guess the preface is just to repeat a little bit what Kenneth said in terms of we really have no idea. We have no idea what's going on. So, and certainly in terms of predictions, it's very, very difficult. And the polls basically have both candidates right now 50-50. So everything that I will say is to some degree based on conjecture, but it's kind of an educated guess as well. And a good example of that sort of new territory that we're in is the situation of what the political calculus is for both candidates. Because normally, you know, like in the United States, when you have primaries, it's already kind of conventional wisdom that when you have primaries, during the primaries, you campaign towards your base and you shore up your base and you win the primaries and you shift to the center to win the national elections. And when you have a runoff system, so a first round and a second round, the first round ends up working a little bit like primaries, so that in both cases, both Guillermo and Piñera had to fend off challenges from the more extreme parts of their particular side. And having gone past that, then the conventional wisdom would be that they would shift to the center. And yet that hasn't happened. And that's one of the interesting questions about this election, but it's also a more interesting question, a more long-term question, regarding basically the changes that are happening in the Chilean party system, in the Chilean political system, and I also think around the world. I think this Chilean election has to some degree reflected some of the phenomena that we're seeing in the States and Europe and elsewhere regarding changes to the party system, populism, and so on. And what we see, and the reason that I think, and again, this is a bit conjecture, we'd have to see, study the numbers more carefully and see what happens on Sunday. But my feeling is that, and a lot of people were commenting on this after the first round, that the floor fell out from the center. The center kind of disappeared. The Christian Democratic Party, which since the 1950s and 60s has positioned itself as the center party in the Chilean system, did particularly badly. Its candidate did, who a presidential candidate, Carolina Goic, who opted to go it alone and not remain part of the Nueva Mayoría, she didn't do well. The people in Congress did not do well. I believe in the House of Deputies, they got, I think, 14 seats. And then other new groups in the center did not do well either. New parties, Andrés Velasco, a former presidential candidate, finance minister in Bachelet's first government, founded a new center party and did not manage to elect anybody to Congress. So there's this sense, this open question as to what happened to the center. And because of that, I think the political calculus has been on both sides to not necessarily do that traditional shift to the center. And if you look at the language on both sides, they seem to have not felt that pressure. They seem to feel that their votes are just do not lie in the center because they're not so sure that there are votes in the center. And secondly, because they still have the two extremes breathing down their necks. So the more interesting case there is the Frente Amplio, because the Frente Amplio one who would have thought, or at least there was a possibility at some point for the first few days after the first round, that the Frente Amplio would support, but publicly support Guillet in an effort to stop Piñera. And the Frente Amplio issued a declaration saying that they were not supporting Guillet, they were not supporting anybody, that they had thought about it, and that they were going to continue with their project, which was to basically represent. And it was quite interesting because they had a seven-point declaration. And the seventh point, I think, is very telling as to what's happening in Chile and what the Frente Amplio is. They said, in that seventh point, number seven, they say that they were going to continue to oppose the neoliberal policy or to work towards reverting the neoliberal policies implemented by the dictatorship and deepened by the Concertación. Now, of course, because the Nueva Mayoría, or Guillet, represents the continuation of the Concertación. So to some degree, what they're saying is that Guillet, indirectly, represents the continuation of the same kind of economic policies that were implemented by Pinochet, which is, I believe, what they actually think. I think that I don't think that's true, but I think that's what they think, and it's very representative of what a new generation of voters, you know, first-time voters who were born in 1990, they were born in democracy, so their kind of historical political viewpoint is very different from that of older voters. So the Frente Amplio did not openly support Guillet, although Beatriz Sánchez, after a few days, did personally. After Piñera made this statement saying that he called into question the results of the legitimacy or the transparency of the first round, with no evidence, it caused a lot of reaction in the political class. The Electoral Commission said there's no evidence. They had one complaint out of the seven some odd million votes. They had one complaint, and so that's when Beatriz Sánchez, probably used it as a bit of an excuse to come out and say, yes, it's more important to defeat Piñera than to oppose Guillet. So, you know, the political calculus on the part of Guillet is to some degree show enough leftist credentials in order to attract a large enough proportion of the Frente Amplio vote without going so far as to scare off the private sector and investors and so on. And I think there's a real question as to whether that will actually work for both reasons, whether he'll be successful in not scaring off investors and whether he'll be successful in attracting the vote. And on the part of Piñera, it's somewhat similar. He hasn't shifted to the center. He, particularly on kind of values-based issues, he remains even more right-wing than he was in his first government or campaign in 2009. Things like gay marriage and so on. And so he's clearly sticking to his base, calculating that he doesn't need to shift anywhere because as long as the Frente Amplio voters don't go out on Sunday to vote for Guillet, he's got enough votes to pull ahead.
How do you think that calculus might play out for both of them? In other words, is the Frente, while Sánchez, as you pointed out, basically begrudgingly came over to support the Guillet after she was attacked, mentioned specifically by Piñera, his allegations of voter fraud, can only be seen as a bit of a lukewarm endorsement. First of all, how many people can she bring with her to vote for Guillet, and the people in the Frente basically see her endorsement as being very, very lukewarm and not basically demanding, as it were, for them to support her and her support for Guillet. How do you think that calculus might play out?
Well, I go back to my first comment. That's one of the things we really don't know. We don't know how much the Frente Amplio controls its own vote. We don't know. Remember, the Frente Amplio is a coalition of about, I don't know, 8-10 parties, small groups, the largest of which is Revolución Democrática, which is a party that emerged from the student movement of 2011-12, headed up by former student leaders. That's the most powerful bloc, and then there's smaller groups, environmental groups and so on. So they have different interests, different priorities, and in order to kind of, perhaps the most educated guess that we can make there is looking at what their vote looks like in the first round. And I did a little bit of a kind of very unscientific study after the first round, where I looked at all the municipalities in Greater Santiago. Piñera comes in first in practically all of them, but there's about 10 municipalities where Beatriz Sánchez beats Guillet for second place. And all of those 10 are basically what we would call lower middle class, but sort of up-and-coming aspirational middle class municipalities. These are people that, so the poor areas voted for Guillet. And the wealthy areas, they obviously, all of them, Piñera comes in first. But it's interesting to see where Beatriz Sánchez and the Frente Amplio does well. They're not traditional voters. In other words, there's a lot of new blood, new voters coming in. They're younger, they're urban. The Frente Amplio does not do that well outside of Santiago. They're well-educated, so they're probably first-generation university-educated. These are the people that are complaining about the amount of debt they have to carry in order to study at university. So they're anti-systemic in the sense that they are not happy with the way that the current political system has treated them. But they're also aware that it's the current political system that basically lifted them or their parents out of poverty. These are not people that are making a huge demand for this to be Venezuela. There's been a lot of talk in Chile about Chile. Ironically, people call it Chilezuela, that somehow the Frente Amplio is going to turn, or Guillet is going to turn Chile into Chilezuela. That's a total misreading. There's a bit of hubris there and a bit of political posturing. But it's also a total misreading of what people are actually asking for. This middle class wants to be protected. They want more protection, more regulation. They don't want to feel the kind of abuse by large corporations and credit card companies and banks and the phone company, all these things. They understand that the reason that they're now having access to higher education is because there are private universities. When higher education was free in the 1960s, there were something like, when my parents studied for free in Chile, there were something like 50,000 students in the entire system. Today, there's 1.5 million. So it's quite. They understand that they're willing to pay the price in order for access, but they also don't want to see that kind of abuse. So what I'm getting at is that how that vote then transfers is not a clear cut thing. There could be that as much as 10% of the Frente Amplio vote, which then switches over to Piñera, because they could be a protest vote against the Nueva Mayoría and against Bachelet, not necessarily a left wing vote per se.
And how does that calculus play out for Piñera, in terms of how much does, I know you mentioned that he's run his campaign further to the right than people would have thought he would have based on his tenure as president last time, and what people generally seem to think they understand about where he stands on the major issues. Do people see how far to the right, and to, use a lack of, for lack of a better expression, has he moved, and how genuine does the electorate view that movement to the right? Do they see it as a heartfelt move or electoral expediency that will then get him into power, where he can then sort of move a little bit back more to the center right rather than sort of the embraceable far right?
Piñera is above all a pragmatist. He personally is not particularly ideological. He's not particularly Catholic. I mean, he's kind of traditional upper-class Chilean, but he's not, an ideologue. If he has shifted to the right, it's because he views that that's where the political opportunity is, because he has to fend off the challenge from caste. If you look at Piñera's campaign in 2009, his campaign was explicitly a continuation of the Concertación's record. His line was that he would do the same but do it better and be more efficient and be better at management, because he was coming from the business sector. He did not have a kind of ideological rejection to what Concepcion had done necessarily. And of course, his family background, his personal background, comes from the Christian Democrats. He's not, his family, his father was a politician and an ambassador under President Frei. So he doesn't come necessarily. He shifted to the right of the political spectrum during the Pinochet years because he made a lot of money, and then saw that there was more political opportunity for him as a politician on the right than on the left. So, but now indeed he seems to have stuck more to the left, to the right, and I think that's much more on the value side than on the policy side. But because if you look at some of the proposals on the policy side, his proposal for pension reform is pretty much in line with what Bachelet had proposed, except that Bachelet proposed an increase from 10 to 14% in the pay in the tax, say, to what you pay for your private pensions. But that extra 4% would then be divided roughly 60-40. 60 would go to a public fund, which would then be redistributed for the poor Chileans, and 40 would go remain in your private account. Piñera is proposing the same, except that the whole thing stays in your private account. I mean, so there's clearly an ideological difference there in terms of redistribution, but in terms of, say, major systemic change, it seems semantic, the difference. Piñera has also suggested there's a lot of proposals that cost his infrastructure proposals cost an awful lot of money. And in the debate 2 nights ago, they asked him how he's going to pay for this. He says, "Well, you know, Chile's going to grow more because I'm better at promoting growth. So, and for each 1% that Chile grows, that's $8 billion into the public coffers," which seems like a very kind of generalized and kind of airy fairy backup for his spending plans. You know, if someone on the left gave an answer like that, the market would go crazy. So I don't see that Piñera in hard policy has shifted that much to the right, except in as much as he and his sector have decided that Chileans are sick and tired of this kind of constant talk of reform on the part of the Bachelet and the Nueva Mayoría. Their calculation was, and they got this a little bit wrong, I think, but just a little bit, that Bachelet's calculation 4 years ago was that they needed to implement this talk about reform and listen to the people, because we had protests on the streets, and if she didn't do this, then this protest would just grow and grow, and they needed to listen to the people. But the general consensus has been, for the most part, that the reforms were needed, but very badly designed and very badly implemented and badly communicated. So the calculus on the right was that they were going to speak to an electorate that was tired of this kind of lack of diligence and lack of just doing things properly. And that all that they would have to do is then come along and say, we're going to just do things proper. And I think one of the surprises on the Piñera side after the first round was that they realized that there wasn't this massive rejection of the reform agenda. There is some, but not as much as they thought. And that's where I think now they have to reevaluate how they're going to go forward. But I don't see this very hard right policy for all the talk of Chilezuela, even Bachelet's government has been reasonably, you know, we don't have unreasonable levels of debt. The level of, you know, debt as a portion of GDP has increased in the last 4 or 8 years, but it's still one of the lowest in the world. You know, the only countries that do better than us in that area are Asian countries that save like crazy and the oil-rich countries that have lots of money. So, if you speak to investors abroad, speak to the Chilean business class, they tend to freak out and they think that you know the sky is falling. But if you speak to foreign investors, as I have a lot in the last few days, who are slightly more concerned about, you know, what the prospects are, but for the most part, their view is that, you know, the fundamentals and the commitment to fiscal. Today, there's a letter in the Mercurio written by a bunch of economists who are working on the Guillet campaign. And one of the first things they say is, well, of course, we have to maintain a commitment to fiscal responsibility. Well, you know, that's not something you hear from Venezuela, for example.
Thank you. Let me just ask, is Patricio, has he joined us yet? Not yet. Okay. Robert, let me ask you, moving on from that, so is it a fair assessment? Well, maybe let's talk about specific issues. What would be each party's or each candidate's position with respect to trade, for example? Now, in Canada, the Pacific Alliance is considered to be a pretty critical pact, something that the Canadian government, conservative and currently liberal, have supported. Trade, and the current government talks about in Canada progressive trade. Where do the candidates stand on that? I mean, we can assume, I suppose, that Piñera is for that and is very supportive of that. How about Guillier? What does he have to say about that?
It's a bit, I knew this question was going to come up, and I started looking, because obviously this is not, as most election campaigns all over the world, international issues are not at the forefront, and they've been almost completely absent in this campaign here. So I had to kind of dig a little bit, and to be honest, there's no evidence of any, even though, for example, you might think that a more leftward-leaning coalition that includes the Communist Party, by the way, and has done for the last 4 years, would be much more skeptical and more kind of perhaps protectionist. There's very little evidence of that, except for TPP, which is now kind of a dead issue anyway. But that was one area where the Chilean left was pressuring quite a bit to go slowly. But in terms of Chile's overall commitment to trade and free trade and agreements with Canada, the States, and so on, in fact, when Trump won the election, there was a lot of nervousness regarding what Trump would do because he had talked about Mexico so much, right, and NAFTA, what he would do with the Chilean Free Trade Agreement. And that has not come up. But the point is that even this government, the Chilean government, their great fear was that the Canadian Free Trade Agreement with the United States would somehow be in jeopardy. So from what I can tell, because it's not present, is that is a policy of continuity there on both sides.
And other issues. Will this be election be decided on issues per se? And if they are, what do you think they might be? At least the salient ones, or are we talking more about sort of the vague values or the atmospherics? As you mentioned, the Venezuelization of Chile, or that scare tactic coming from one side, and I suppose might say the scare tactic from the other side when Piñera questions whether the first round was fair, people saying, "Oh, that's his discourse sounds a little bit like Trump when he talks about devaluing the institutions of state and the electoral institutions." Could you talk to that a little bit, please?
I can also wade in later. This is Patricio.
Aha.
Uh-huh. Oh, hi, Patricio. Hi, Patricio. Did you hear that question?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well then, welcome to the call. You've already been introduced and your background presented, so please jump right in.
Okay. So I don't think elections are just on issues or just on personalities. There are always a mix of issues and personalities for different kind of voters. From the viewpoint of the left-wing coalition, the government coalition, they would prefer this election to be a referendum on Piñera because Piñera has very high negatives, and thus many people will vote against Piñera even if they don't necessarily like Guille or care that much for what Guille plans to do. From the viewpoint of Piñera, of course, he would like it to be a referendum on the economic reforms implemented by the Bachelet administration, or at least that's what he originally planned. But since Chileans voted, a majority of them voted for candidates who favored Bachelet reforms, perhaps on a different emphasis, but they favor Bachelet's reforms, now in the runoff, Piñera is trying to focus exclusively on his capacities. He wants to say, look, you might not like me as much, you might disagree with some of the things that I want to do, but I will be a better president and I have more skills and capacities than my rival.
And does that would seem to be something that would appear at least to the centrist voters. Is that fair to say?
Well, elections
are
always
the ones
that
are maybe less ideological. He's hoping for less ideological and more, look, let's just get some stuff done I'm an executive. I know how to do it. You know, I ran a government before, and you know,
right.
You know, the sky won't fall as opposed to sort of someone untested and who may be beholden to other interests and not be able to hold a coalition together and govern appropriately. Is that sort of how this is being played out?
Right. The runoff elections are always decided by the median voter, and the median voter tends to be a bit less political and a bit more concerned with sort of basic stuff, the president knowing what to do, having leadership abilities, having a good team. Now, Piñera needs to get more voters in, and he needs to dissuade some of the voters who opted for left-wing candidates from turning out on Sunday. So his message is directed to moderate voters who either did not vote or who might have voted for some of the left-wing candidates because he needs to bring them over to his side. And that's why he's becoming, or he's trying to be a bit more moderate. Alejandro Guille is trying the same thing, though the farther left coalition, the broad front, the Frente Amplio, has criticized him for not embracing all of their policies. Guille understands that those people, for the most part, will vote for him anyway because he is less farther away from them than Piñera, but Guille needs to go after those moderate voters who will decide the election.
So at the end of the day, and I think Robert was saying this, the center, at least in the first round, the center seemed to fall away. People were
but
voting
it didn't.
More towards.
I mean, if you think, I disagree with that point. The center lost seats, but they didn't lose votes. What happened to the center is that the ruling coalition went split into two different coalitions, and then there was another centrist coalition that ran on its own. If you adapt the votes of those three coalitions, they would have ended up with a majority in the chamber and the Senate. The problem wasn't that voters didn't vote for the center. The problem is that centrist parties went split into three different coalitions, and thus they lost seats. But if you look at the votes, voters are still very much centrist.
Well, okay. So let's if we take that that view of things, where it happens to the three center coalitions? You already have the Christian Democrats. I'm assuming you assume that within the three, has already announced, or Goyce has already announced her support for Guille. I mean, how effective is that? How about the other two splinter parties? Where do they head in all this? And do the people follow them, follow their candidates, to the presidential candidate that they so dictate?
Well, I think a majority of those who voted for Goyce and for Sanchez and for Marco Enriquez, for all the sort of left-wing candidates, will end up voting for Guille, and that's why the runoff is so competitive. Piñera's vote plus the votes of the other right-wing candidate add up to 44%, so Piñera needs to get new voters in and try to convince some of the other voters. But on the first round night, the advantage was on Guille's side because he had a path to victory, whereas Piñera had to build a path to victory. We don't know how things have turned out in the campaign because there haven't been polls. And in the last 2 weeks, it's illegal to disseminate polls. So we're kind of in the blind here. But everyone expects this to be a close race. But the initial advantage was on Guillermo's side. So after the first round. So if Piñera wins, it's going to be somewhat of an upset because the expectations was that Guille should bring in all the support for the alternative, for the three alternative, or from the other left-wing candidates, and he would have enough to win a majority of votes in the runoff. I don't know what Robert thinks.
Well, I'd like to hear. Go ahead, Robert.
I think that can be as true as the alternative version, because I think there's an argument to be made. I mean, I absolutely buy that argument, but I also buy the argument that Guillermo represents a coalition that doesn't like him. And when you're a presidential candidate, in other words, Guillermo is a Kenneth. You mentioned in the introduction that Guillermo was a socialist. He's not. He's a sort of independent, affiliated with the Radical Party. And so, but he's been proclaimed by a socialist party. He's been proclaimed by or he represents as a presidential candidate three or four parties, five parties that don't really like him very much. And he was not, he may not even have been the first choice, but about 6 months ago or 8 months ago, he was leading in the polls. And so they said, oh, why not? And so if you find yourself, as we do now, in a situation where the most important thing for Guillet is to assure turnout of his own people, plus the Frente Amplio that really doesn't like him for the reasons I mentioned at the beginning, and that has had a very lukewarm kind of endorsement of him, if we can call it an endorsement, then adding all that up, I would say that that Piñera is in the pole position. But I can certainly see, you know, Pato's point as well. I mean, it's anyone's guess.
No, but I mean, the people hate Piñera. I mean, all these other voters voted in the first round against Piñera. I agree in that Guillet, if he wins, he's going to be a minority president and people are going to hate him right away. But he can win based on an election as a plebiscite on Piñera. People might vote for Guillet because they want to vote against Piñera. So that gives him a pole position. What I think will happen, though, is that if Guillet wins, what you are saying will become true. He's going to have horrible support because people don't really like him. No one really likes him. He only got 22% in the first round. So he's going to lead a disastrous government. But he might win the election because people are voting against Piñera.
Yeah, and vice versa. I mean,
Patricio,
the problem is that this campaign has basically the second round turned into who hates the other side more.
Right.
Or fears.
Well, it wasn't that. That was essentially the endorsement that Beatriz Sanchez gave to Guillermo, and as we said earlier, and only begrudgingly after she was attacked by Piñera, basically said it's anybody but Piñera is who I support.
Right,
but that's how Pedro Pablo Kuczynski won in Peru.
Fair enough. Well, let me, Pato, ask a question. We talked about this a little earlier with Robert. To what extent that CASP got 8% of the vote, to the extent that Piñera needs that 8% of the vote, to what extent does that scare off people in the center? Or does it not at all?
No, not at all. I mean, Piñera hasn't really wasted time on trying to attract those voters or CAST because CAST and those voters are anti-communist. So they will vote for whomever is against the Communist Party. So, I mean, Piñera has all those voters in his pocket, and they will come out and enthusiastically vote for Piñera because the first-round vote was a protest vote. Even CAST knew that, I mean, in the first-round campaign, CAST didn't really campaign against Piñera. He was saying, look, I can go with Piñera into the runoff so that we can keep the left out. So those voters are sure votes for Piñera, and he hasn't wasted time trying to go after them. So I don't think Piñera has had the same challenge as Guillet has had. Guillet needs to move to the center to win those moderate voters, but he also needs to signal to the left that he will do some of the things they want in order to make sure that they turn out and vote against Piñera on Sunday.
So if you're a Canadian investor or a Canadian government policy planner in the foreign ministry in Global Affairs Canada, what might you expect if each candidate were to win in terms of investments in natural resources, support for the platform that Canada's had for the Pacific Alliance, progressive trade, human rights? Canada's taken a strong stand on Venezuela, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, across the board, how might Chile look different from a Canadian perspective? Or what might appeal to Canadian values and policies, both in public and private sector? How might that look different for each candidate?
Well, I think, broadly speaking, the big picture, as I said, they're going to maintain both sides have not indicated any kind of change in their attitudes towards trade or free trade. Guillet has...
Yes, I can hear you. We can hear you.
Background noise, though. Okay, it went away.
Yeah,
okay,
there was
sorry.
Background noise. from the part of Guillen, there is a temptation, also an electoral necessity, to use language that is somewhat more, say, I wouldn't say aggressive, but somewhat more challenging to the private sector. He's talked about, you know, reaching into the pockets of the wealthy in the top 1%. There's a kind of populism there that he's used to attract Frente Amplio voters. And that could translate into a few things, but basically things that we have seen already in this government, sort of more, making it somewhat more difficult in terms of investment in mining and environmental regulations, public consultations, indigenous consultations, things that have already been going on and that I know that have been of concern to, particularly mining companies, which I don't think would disappear entirely with a Piñera government, but I think there were, you know, certainly the Piñera's attitude towards investment is far more open. I've said this for a while that, you know, if you look at Laos's government, for example, or Frei's government, 20 years ago, there was a lot of political capital to be had for a president to show up at a mine that involved, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in investment and cut ribbons and say, look at this investment we attracted. Today, there's very little political capital to be had in doing that because basically the question is, well, what's that's going to do to our water? What's it going to do to our – why are you taking away our natural resources? And so on. There's a natural political reality there that has to do with Chile maturing as well and not being, say, at a place where Peru is now at the place where Chile was 20 years ago, where there's political capital to be had in attracting investment. I think we're at a different stage, and now companies have to make a greater effort in terms of making sure that they dot all the T's and are good corporate citizens that make it easier for a government like Guillen to kind of get traction out of increased investment.
On foreign policy, I'll ask Pato your view on the trade and this follow-up question as well, but sticking with Robert, do you expect position vis-a-vis, for example, Venezuela to change under Guillen? We can assume, Guillen has been very, very clear about what he thinks about what's going on in Venezuela. But how about under Guillen?
That's for Robert.
For Robert?
For me.
Yeah, Robert.
Oh, that was for me? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, and then I'll ask Patricia the same question. What might you expect Guillen's position to be vis-a-vis Venezuela?
I personally think there's just a continuation. I mean, Chile's position regarding Venezuela has been cautious, essentially because Chile has historically maintained this position that they don't like the idea of other countries intervening in the internal affairs of a neighboring Latin American country, which comes from my own experience of intervention. Now, I think in the case of Venezuela, that in the last perhaps year or two has shifted a little bit, and Bachelet has become slightly more critical of where things stand, simply because it's now reached a point where it's very difficult to not be critical. I don't think Guillen would move very further, much further away from that.
Patricia, your thoughts on trade, natural resources, and Venezuela under the respective governments?
Okay, sure. I think there won't be that much structural change in Chile because no president will have a majority in Congress to pass any major reforms. The left will control the Senate, but the left has some moderates there that will not vote for radical left-wing legislation. And in the chamber, the left will also control the chamber, but again, the radicals will want, or the broad front, the Frente Amplio, will want more radical change, and the moderates will not. So I don't think there will be a sufficient majority to change the structure of Chile's economy. But Piñera will put a sign at Chile's door saying the country's open for business, whereas Guillen will most likely put a sign saying these are the conditions that you have to meet if you want to do business in Chile. So with the same structure in place, with the same set of policies and legislation in place, Piñera will try to be a proactive, market-friendly, pro-investment president, and Guillen will not put the focus on promoting investment and promoting economic development. He will put the focus on trying to promote some kind of redistribution. on Venezuela, I don't think anyone will lead the charge in Latin America to help restore democratic order in Venezuela. And that's because Donald Trump is very unpopular in Latin America. And if Donald Trump is the only way that Venezuela can sort of protect, or the Venezuelan government, the Maduro government, can protect itself against foreign pressure is by posing the tension as a tension between Trump and Venezuela. And in that end, Latin American presidents will not want to side with Trump. So as long as Trump is the U.S. president, I don't think Latin American countries will take an active role in denouncing human rights violations in Venezuela or trying to work with the Venezuelan opposition to restore democratic order in that country.
Thank you. Okay, operator, if you wouldn't mind opening it up for questions, we can queue up the questions. And while we're waiting for those to come in, let me ask another question of both of you. What, when we look at what comes in on Sunday, what are the unknowns? What's going to be the X factor in this election on Sunday that it's so hard to determine, but which will be determinative, you think, in the end?
I think turnout is going to be central. Thank you.
Go.
I think turnout is going to be
central. Let me interrupt
central.
For just one second. Excuse me, Pato, okay. Let me interrupt for just a second. Operator, if you could please explain once again, if people want questions, how they would queue up for them, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, should you have a question, please press star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before pressing any keys. Please proceed.
Thank you, operator. I'm sorry, Pato, you were speaking.
Yeah, I think turnout is going to be the key on Sunday. If there is low turnout, Piñera will probably win. If turnout is extremely high or very high, then Guille will probably win on an anti-Piñera turnout vote. If turnout is around 50-55%, then it's going to be a very, very close race between Piñera and Guille. Now, I don't think there will be that much change in terms of the policies the next president will adopt. Piñera would like to introduce a number of reforms, but he's not going to have a majority in Congress, so he's going to have to go through executive orders and sort of discretionary government policies to show that the country's open for business. Guille will have a majority in Congress, but the majority will not agree on which direction the country should go into, and thus I don't think Guille is going to be a very effective president in implementing any kind of reforms. So in terms of discretionary policies, Piñera will be more proactive. In terms of structural reforms, I don't think there is that much room for major things to happen.
Okay, and just to go back on your first point, and you see the turnout being sort of the main X factor. Are you looking for any specific demographic, in other words, younger voters, voters in certain areas? What do you think will be telltale signs in that regard, or do you don't see it that way?
Well, no, yeah, I mean, obviously, older voters vote at higher rates than younger voters. In Chile, rural voters vote at higher rates than urban voters because they are sort of carried into voting precincts by political machines. So if we see more younger voters turning out than in previous elections, then Guille has a chance. If we see voters turning out primarily in middle class and upper class areas, then probably Piñera has the upper hand.
Thank you. We do have a question from the phone line. The question comes from Andre Beal from Wilson Center. Andre, please go ahead.
Hi, yes, I just wanted to see if you could expand a little bit on voter turnout participation in general, both for the first term or first round of elections and kind of what's expected. You said, you know, older voters versus younger voters, but are there any, I know polling data isn't available right now for the next 2 weeks, but what are expectations in general?
Okay, so the polls predicted turnout, and they predicted the turnout correctly. What they did not predict correctly was the composition of the turnout. Pollsters were predicting higher turnout in the outside regions of Santiago, and turnout was a bit higher in Santiago than elsewhere in Chile. So the polls were right in predicting turnout as 47% of the eligible population. But they mispredicted who would turn out. For the runoff, polls are predicting similar turnout as in the first round. Some polls are predicting slightly lower turnout. I think those polls are wrong. I think the fact that there is a more competitive election will marginally increase turnout, but turnout should marginally increase mostly in middle income areas and primarily in urban areas, and that includes some younger voters. So I think Santiago will decide the election more than the rest of the country this time around.
Robert?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would go back to what I'm saying. I think it's very one of these issues about why the polls have such a hard time predicting. And as Patricio says, that they got a sense of the level of turnout, but not its composition, and that has a lot to do with the fact that this is only the second presidential election that we've had with voluntary voting. It has to do with the fact that we've changed the electoral system since last time around, and basically that makes it very difficult to have any kind of reliable sampling models until I suspect a few years down the road or a few elections more. So I'd be really very cautious in terms of making any predictions as to who stays, who votes and who doesn't, and for whom. But I do agree with what Patricio says, that, you know, I mean, it's quite clear that if you get a sense of who votes for the Centampio, that if you get a higher turnout, more urban turnout, younger turnout, you're probably going to see a year doing well.
Thank you. Operator, do we have any other questions?
There are no questions at the moment.
Okay, well, then let me, we have a minute or two left, so let me get to the inevitable question, predictions. Gentlemen, who wins and why? Pato, why don't you go first? Who wins
sure.
and why?
So I think Sebastián Piñera is going to win. And here's the reasons why. So part of the Frente Amplio is not supporting Guille, and though a majority of Frente Amplio voters will vote for Guille, if just some 20% of them do not show up in the runoff election, then Piñera has a good chance. Piñera has managed a better runoff campaign. He's more experienced. This is his third runoff, presidential election runoff campaign, so he's made fewer mistakes, and I think the presidential debate on Monday, Piñera went after the moderate voters by showing that he understands government better, that he's more capable, and I think on the margin that's going to be enough to get him over the edge. So I go for Piñera.
Thank you. Robert?
Well, I was hoping I could disagree with you, but I think particularly after the debate this week, which Piñera did handle particularly well and Guillier handled particularly badly, which is not to suggest that debates really change minds, but at least when you have the situation that we have in Chile, which is that Guillier needed to get people who are skeptical to go out and vote for him, he did very little in that debate to help himself. So that was one thing. And secondly, what I said earlier about the divisions within the Nueva Mayoría, the Frente Amplio is very lukewarm endorsement. There's actually no indication that even the Beatriz Sánchez has the ability, even though she announced her support, that she has the ability to bring her voters with her. So there's just too many question marks and too many things indicating that Yed doesn't have all the bits in place to make sure that happens for him. And as Patricio said, Piñera has dotted the I's. He has they'll have party organization on the day. They have funding.
to get the vote out, and the I suspect that that's what's going to happen.
Thank you very much. To both of you, I will close this out in a second. I'll ask just the operator, is there any other question pending before we close the session?
Ladies and gentlemen, should you have a question, please press star followed by one. There are no questions at this time.
So with that, let me thank Robert and Patricio very much for very insightful commentary. I think we covered a lot of ground and of varying opinions and contrasts during this past hour. We will all be watching what happens this weekend and be mindful of your predictions and the reasons why. Of course, there's going to be a lot more discussions to be had later about what happens after the election, what the ruling, what the president will be able to accomplish, and we talked a bit about the complications in Congress and moving policies through that vehicle. And we will all watch very carefully to see how that plays out. So once again, Patricia, Robert, thank you very much. Thank you for everybody who has participated in the conference today. Have a good day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.